a wisdom that contradicted itself. It had you going around boasting of it as though it was perfect. Yes, I'm not going to take your time today, but anytime you want me to show you that it contradicted itself, I'll show you one day, inshallah, how it just contradicts itself. How it says just outright falsehood. I'm talking about bigger falsehood. Bigger lie. Ideals lie. And language lie. You say one thing at one time and come right back in the same lesson, in the same little booklet. And go against what he said. In the same little booklet. Since you've been listening to me, you have pages from me a stack up to your knees. Professor Father Muhammad only left you with enough, maybe a bunion high. Might reach the height of a bunion. About as thick as a good bunion, maybe. Or better, I could say a corn, average corn. Yeah. He'll lift a little bit. But I got volumes. And I have a brother who's so interested in what I teach that he set up a library to study what I teach and to improve the grammar and language of it for better presentation, publication presentation. He's here with me now. And he told me that they have gone through stacks of it, volumes and volumes of it, saying he finds it seem like it contradicts, he said, but it's consistent. He has had himself and experts working on it. He say, and they find that it seems, it seems sometimes to contradict itself. He say, but it doesn't. It's consistent. That should tell you something. And these are materials that have been welcomed in churches, public schools, public discussions, leadership discussion, bishop discussion. Don't you know it has to be something to it? I'm telling you who are excited over how Caucasians or people with degrees respond to things. I'm telling you how they respond to this and hope that it will bring you some of your ignorance. There are some who won't have faith in anything that comes from me. Unless Caucasian. And I mean it has to be a lot of Caucasians. Caucasians have to dominate it. Then they are joined as inferior. Yes. Or they have to find the leadership with all their degrees. The media have to take up. They have to have no way out. Then they'll accept it. If the world becomes what I say, then they'll accept it. But until then, as long as there's room for them to run and still identify with the world, they'll do it. Isn't that pitiful? Well, let's go on. I hope you have patience to stay with me this afternoon. When God wants to bring about a thing, we're told in the language of this perfect book that was revealed directly from God to his holy prophet Muhammad, the universal messenger to all the world. We are told in this book that he only has his wanted and his fears. And his want is not like our want. We feel a need for something. Means that he only has to command it. He commands it. He says, will it to be? Command it. And it is. But we are told also that God hems the people in by gradual degrees. Of people that he wants to close in and stop from doing their evil things, he hems them in by degrees. And we are also told that God was about to make this universe. Heaven, the earth, sun, moon, and stars, clouds, wind, rain, and everything. And God addressed the unformed past before it had been formed. He addressed the man to tell what the man would be like when he was formed. He addressed the angel and all the creation before it was formed. So it will be revealed to Prophet Muhammad to tell us what God foresaw before he even made the creation. So God says that he's going to make a natural creation. And he would like to have a ruler in it. Someone to serve as his custodian. Oh, that is wonderful. Oh, man, this is wonderful. All these other creatures, the angels, everything. We don't want it. We pass. Man in hate, how can you die? Yes, man in hate, how can you die? So if you're the one that accepted it, God had to give it to him. God offered it to whoever would accept it. And it just so happened to be the human being that God would free, the one that would accept it. That is free from law of nature, law of the universe, law of instinct, etc. We're free so you can make your choices between whatever you want. That creature, he rests up powerless. And God says, man is given to nature. Oh, I'm telling you, that's wonderful, brother. Because I see it in you. A brother helped me up one day in an insulting way. Maybe in day. He knew I wanted to leave, but I was in a hurry. So he just helped me to be ugly, fight for it, you know, to be cruel. Answer me questions. That didn't have, there wasn't no importance. When he got through, he said, now you can go home, buddy, man. Yeah. He said, now you can go home, buddy, man. Now, I'm not criticizing his insulting disposition. What I'm criticizing is his stupidity. I wasn't going home. How in the hell he knew I was going home? The poor, empty-headed, stupid man just thought in his own mind that I was wanted to hurry to go home. He didn't need to go home, buddy, man. So I said, I'll nominate him. What I want to say, you ain't worth me saying another word to you. Heard of dehydrated bowel movement. Can't even think anymore. It lost all of his moisture. All it can do is represent what it was. It can just put in your mind what it was. Now, he deserved that because he was very unbecoming. In fact, he looked at me like he wanted to fight me. And he don't know that all the fists and all the guns in the world cannot harm me unless Allah allows it. Four beautiful creatures. I would like to read a verse from Quran, chapter 2, Al-Baqarah, verse 148. God has revealed it to Prophet Muhammad. Each person has a goal which Allah is influencing. Then go as a cooperative race, as in a cooperative race, for the honorable resources. Wherever you may be, Allah will unite you as a group. Surely Allah has power over all things. Isn't that a wonderful revelation? had the key. This was revealed for all the world, but in that time it was being delivered to Prophet Muhammad's people of Arabia, not to all of his people of the world, just to the Arab people and those that were gathering with him in that part of the world. But look how perfect it is today for us. What have we wanted? We have wanted unity, solidarity. We want to have collective power. We know that we have been doomed, called and defalled, robbed and diminished to have any individual or small group power. We know that our only hope is in having the combined force of the whole ethnic group behind a movement for progress. It is only with that collective strength that we can be successful. Common sense has taught us that long time ago. Marcus Garvey asked for unity. Drew Ali before him asked for unity. Frederick Douglass asked for the unity of his people and also for the unity of spirit of the nation. He was a kind of predecessor for the spirit of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. But all of those men thought that the race had to remain unified. All of Elijah Muhammad called on us to unite. And we still, brother and sister, are in need of that cohesiveness that we don't have. If we had that, all we could do wonders for uplifting the dignity or the status of our people in America and all over the world. It is not because your leadership is inferior. It's not because your leadership is not powerful enough. We have students of political science. We have students of government. We have educators. We have orators who can articulate what we want. They can articulate our needs. We have qualified people. And now you have vision in your new leadership. You have the vision that can bring us home. And you have to know this. There's never any progress in the past for people except in the path of that vision. You can have all the resources. You can have all the resources. But if you don't have the correct vision, there is no progress for that people. We have had resources, but we haven't had leadership with the correct vision. We have had leaders with partial vision, seeing part of the need, seeing one side of the problem. But today, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad and Dr. King, the freedom rights movement and the movement to dignify the social creature up from slavery. The two have come together and they have balanced vision for the leadership. Balanced vision for the leadership. There's nothing holding us back now but your allegiance. The only thing holding us back, the opportunities are here. This government that had the faith of a Dr. Siegel and Mr. Hyde, that was a diabolic, ruling beast in one side of his personality and a democratic-minded society in the other side of his personality. It could bring out any faith it wanted for the circumstances. They kept us in hell. Now America has purged its own blood and have accepted to be a personality, a human personality, with one human face for the whole society, for all the citizens of this country. The ugly signs of Jim Crow days have gone from the South. Emmett Till now cannot be crucified as he was in my day and time here in Chicago. If you go to the South now, you might find it more pleasant there than you will find in many of the northern quarters. I've been to the South. I find more hospitality there, more welcome there, more genuine human sentiment there for me than I find in a lot of these northern quarters. Dear people, we have lived to see Eisenhower, a Republican president, bring out the National Guard, punish his own people, set his own people at the point of a gun, at the point of a bayonet and a rifle, threaten them that they'll be killed if they stand in the way of our justice. We have seen a great president, President Kennedy, be assassinated because of the stand he took for justice in this country. We have seen his brother, the Attorney General. We have seen him assassinated because of his firmness. They couldn't bargain with those men. They had no money to bribe those men because those men came from rich family backgrounds. They couldn't bribe those men. And they couldn't force those men to back up. They were men who died for the cause of justice in this country. And that meant that they died also for the cause of our justice in this country. The courts now are on record for standing up for all the rights of every citizen equally. Oh, yes, a new day in America. But a big price was paid. Their leaders paid, leaders of the establishment paid with their life. And our leadership paid with its life. Sacrifices, spirit, anguish of mind and soul, all of that went into the price that was paid. Plus the loss of physical life. Dr. King was assassinated. Malcolm X was assassinated. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad was assassinated. You don't understand it, but he was assassinated too. It wasn't a gun that killed him. It was infiltrators. Infiltrators. The pressure of infiltration of the Nation of Islam that made him weak in his mind, that made him weak in his body, that made his willpower weak. And sickness took over his body and caused his death. The same forces that killed President Kennedy and his brother, the same forces that killed Dr. King, were the forces that killed the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. They didn't do it with a gun, a bullet, right out of the gun, and kill the man, no. But they did it all the same. Corrupt elements from a corrupt society and a corrupt government came into the leadership of the Nation of Islam and virtually imprisoned the Honorable Elijah Muhammad and spared his weaknesses, spared his love, and deprived his good nature, his good tendencies, and deprived his good aspirations of realizing anything at all and gave vent only to his weaknesses. You want women? You want girls, Elijah? You can have those. You want money, Elijah? You can have money. You want fruit? You want to cut your way, your path, independently? You can't have that, Elijah. We got infiltrators in here. We got infiltrators in here. In your own color. Blacker than you. Nappy-headed than you. We got them in here to see, Elijah, that you don't make it any further down this road of moral and virtuous dignity. They came in, they destroyed the moral and virtuous achievements of the Nation of Islam. They gave the Nation of Islam society to lust for women, to lust for more than one wife, to lust for the girls, to high society living, high style living beyond our means. When I came in here, the present leadership invited me up to the top of the John Hancock building. And there we sat up there. I haven't been there with you, I guess. We sat up there and we ate a meal that cost us over $100. I think it was about 3 or 4 of us eating. It cost us over $100 to eat up there. We sitting up there at the top of John Hancock building, looking out over Chicago like we were in an airplane or a helicopter or something. Eating up your money. Eating up your money. Not Jabber's money. If it was Jabber's money, I could see us doing that. He got this money. But I can't see us eating up $100 and some that it takes you a whole week to get working hard. I never went up there with them again. In time, God blessed me to bring them down to earth. I guarantee you, they're not up there either now. They're trying to pay their rent next month. They're falling into your condition that they put you in. That's our law of justice. I didn't do nothing but try to do what I know is right. The justice is not mine, the justice is God. Yes, in time they destroyed all of the ships. They tell me they even found a way into the privacy of the civil rights leaders and corrupted them the same way they corrupted the nation, the leadership of the Nation of Islam. This is bad and good. It's bad that we would have no weaknesses. It's bad that a society would be that wicked to exploit our weaknesses. It's good that Allah has revealed to us a weakness, and a wickedness that will keep us on guard for the future. Oh, yeah. God in revealing this to us has made us stronger. He has prepared us for harder days. Let us go on now. We are trying to review what has happened historically in the leadership that is behind us in hopes of better appreciating great opportunity that we have today. Sometimes you have to go back and count your sheep to realize your blessing. And count the sheep means those that you lost and those that you still have. There is an evil on us now that we have been battling. There is not an evil design expressly for us. It is an evil that was designed for all people out of the master call. Now, I'll explain what I'm talking about. Did someone bring me a master call? I don't want to use your handkerchief after doing that, and I don't like to mess up with your handkerchief. If you'll go back here and get a napkin. Pardon me, I have a slight cold, and we are human beings, and I think we should be human beings. I have a cold, I need a napkin, and I need to excuse me for a second to blow my nose. Thank you. There is an evil that has troubled society, that is, the leadership in society, for some time now. They have been going wavering backward and forward, trying to weigh the wickedness of this evil against the benefit social benefit. The evil I'm talking about now is something that you have great knowledge of, most of you. It is the evil of what they call subliminal seduction. Many of us think that this evil was just recently brought out. This is an old evil. It goes back beyond the time when they used television, radio. It goes back to pre-industry time. That is, before modern industry. It's no new thing. But now, the tools for effecting it are so much greater. So we now have a much greater problem. But it's no new thing. Deception. Exploring and exploring human psychological behavior. This ain't no new thing. A whole order of secret science, so-called science, pseudoscience, which is really not pseudoscience, it's actually science. But they call it pseudoscience because on the surface it's false science. Called heraldry and alchemy. This was the knowledge of how to explore and exploit the human nature, the human psychology. It would take us hours just to relate to you the description of this science of for human dominance. A science that was born to enslave human beings without their knowledge of them being enslaved. To enslave you without you recognizing that you are being enslaved. That's putting it very plainly. Couldn't be put in plainer terms. The physical change, that's needed when you got somebody to do a specific job. And the job is in a specific place. And it requires special kinds of tools, physical instruments. When the job is physically placed and is specifically drawn out, then you need to either convince people that you have to do this or you have to enslave them to get them to do it. But if a job is not that restricted, it is a job that can happen in different places. You can make people do those jobs without them knowing they're being made to do it. And I'm not talking about coming over TV with any fast messages too fast for your pickup, your mental pickup. I'm talking about bypassing your conscious awareness of what is happening, that's all. That ain't no new thing, that's an old thing. All they have to do is to study your nature, to study how you put up God, how you put up blocks, what you want, what blocks you have, and then either find a way around those blocks or find a way to create in you wants that won't have blocks. So if they can't find a way around the block, they create wants in you that won't have blocks. It's just that simple. And you never know what they're doing to you. All you know is society is changing. It ain't like it used to be. You're damn right. You're going to hell. They're taking you to hell. And lock you up in the fiery furnace. I'll turn you loose in a wild wilderness to nowhere. A bottomless pit world. Yeah. It's easy to do. All you have to do is study the human nature and explore the weaknesses in the human nature. This ain't no new trick. This was invented by Satan the devil. So-called comes in human shape and human form, but is not a human being. A spiritual and mental disposition that takes over an individual until he becomes a devil. That kind of being came up on the earth because he refused to accept what God wanted for society. He refused to accept, to submit his authority to God's plan. There's in man a desire to realize his full potential. God asked us to give something of our desire for his pleasure. He asked us to give up our stubbornness, to give up our stubbornness, stubborn, pardon me, desire to have full freedom, out of full freedom of hand of power. Man wants the full freedom of the hand of power. God say, no, that won't work in my plan. Give up some of this freedom of the hand of power. The devil says, why should I give it up? You have made me to want it. This is my nature. And you will find that I'm better for your creation than those passive spiritual human beings that will accept that they give up some of the power. He challenged God. Not directly, but he challenged God's plan. And in challenging God's plan, he challenged God. He challenges God's natural plan. He tells the plan is wrong. In effect, he's telling God, you're wrong, God. He tells the plan is wrong. The world cannot be progressed better by allowing human beings intellectual freedom. The world can best progress by keeping the weak intellectually enslaved and giving the strong intellectual freedom. And then he decides who should be intellectually brought on. Satan decides who will he select to be the intellectually strong that are going to dominate and master and rule the world. So he keeps the rule of the world in the power of a few. And keeps the great majority, and believe me, Satan is not a racist. He don't care nothing about no color. He used color because it's usable. But whenever it is good to use, in his plan, he uses it. Whenever it's so good for his plan, he gets rid of it. He kills racism. Yeah. So don't think the devil is a racist. The devil is not a racist. The devil is a devil that will use any tool in order to get his thing over. He makes races of me and you. But he's not a racist. No. He's got to stand above racism. He can't master the world if he gets down to that low level of human mentality. He has to stand above racism. He stands up in the true world of cut and dry reality. And he dismisses human sentiment. He throws out the human heart. He won't listen to the human heart. He only listens to what cold reality says. And not the reality of human heart. After all, the human heart is a part of this reality. But he just misses that part of the reality, and he only listens to that part that won't suggest to him human sentiment or human questions. We could talk to you for hours just on this. Satan is a creature that is materially geared. Materially geared. Materially, the sentiments are gained by material, not by human sentiment, not by human heart, human feeling. That's why they used long time ago the snake as a symbol of the Satan. Because the Satan, his temperature is not gained from within. There is nothing within that stabilizes the temperature of the snake. The temperature of the snake is gauged by the physical environment. If the physical environment is cold, the temperature drops down, the snake's temperature drops down. If the physical environment temperature go up, the snake's temperature go up. If it goes down so low, he can't have any mobility, he lays dead until it rises up again. He can hibernate. He can stay in the cold and hibernate and wait until it gets warm enough for him to come up. Why is he inactive when it's cold? When it's cold, he don't have to act. That's what things want. Cold. He rests when it's cold. When the society is cold, Satan rests. He wants it cold. But when it warms up, he livens back up. What's happening? Let me get on my job. Society is warming up. Human sentiments are coming up. Let me get on my job. Poison the society. Or devour them whole. You can't talk on all these things. It takes too much time. But in all of this, there's a lot of wisdom. The snake, just to give you a few of these characteristics, is for you to think on between the time that we will meet again, inshallah, God willing. The snakes have a lot of unique features, unique characteristics. He's smooth body, so he's hard to hold. Smooth body, hard to hold. You can't grab him by a limb, he ain't got no limb. He's very flexible at all points of his body, so you never know from what point or from what direction he's going to be hit. His movement is devious. It's tricky. And he moves as though he's calming you or trying to hypnotize you. He moves spooky-like. Spooky-like. Like he's doing a charm dance or something, you know? Let me talk about the snake. Because the ancients, they used the snake as a symbol for the devious mind. That's when he become a devil. There's another thing about the snake. The snake, he has a mouth that's out of proportion with his body. His mouth is much too big for his body. He can open his mouth to a dimension bigger than his body. So he fools you. You don't think he can swallow you. Because you look bigger than his body. But when his mouth opens, his mouth is bigger than his body. Then many of the snakes that have teeth, their teeth are made to lock whatever it swallows in so it never gets out. Their teeth turn backwards into their mouth. Tooth in backwards. So if you start to try to get out of the mouth, you just stick back in yourself stronger on the teeth. Their nose that have poison, their poison is here. It looks just like any other snake. But back in the back, the fangs. And their poison sac at the fangs. And when he bites, it puts pressure on them in the juice. It puts an injection on you. Puts an injection in you. And you poison. Then he doesn't have to fight you. He just watches you struggle with what he put into you. So the snake is one who makes his job easy. He bites you and watches you suffer. And pretty soon you fall helpless. And he just walks right up with no problem and swallows you whole. His digestive juices are extraordinarily strong. Other things have to chew their food. Or digest their food, the part of the thing that they eat. The snake, he can eat the whole thing. His digestive juice digests everything. Meat, blood, bone, toenail, fur, everything. How about the snake? Then there's another unique thing about him. Most of them, in fact, I think all of them shed their skin. So he can leave his skin laying somewhere and you run up on the skin and think it's him. Then he preserves his history. He leaves the pattern behind him, to be studied by his young servants.
Well, thin as skin is a pattern, isn't it?
Yes, a pattern.
Thin as skin is the pattern of the snake.
I'm talking about the color pattern. Don't think the snake is just now. We're talking about a symbol, only a symbol that speaks for what is in the devil maker. So he leaves his pattern behind. And he shares the pattern, I think, every year. Is that right? I think it's every year. Every year, a new pattern. These are some of the unique kinds of features of the snake. Hibernate, kills its thing and wants to die, swallows it whole, have a way of locking the thing in so it can't get out through its hole, being swallowed alive. He can kill the thing alive. And it swallows it alive, you know. Yeah. Okay. So, don't think that this new breed of Satan is less wise, less wicked, and less devious than the earlier breed. Operating now is the place where he was predicted that he would operate. It was predicted that he would operate, that he would finally, at the end of the world, be seen operating out of the forces of materialism. And he would have a dual role in the world. One would be his position in materialism, the other would be his position in religion. The Bible says that he would be seen in the lake, meaning religion. And again it says that Satan would be the thief, and his number would be 666. This means he would also be the chief of materialism. It has been told long time ago, God inspired his prophet and showed him the relationship that what would come. The knowledge has come to us in the Quran. We will mention it in just a minute or two, I hope. But in the Bible, before the Quran was revealed, he's given in two beasts, Bohemoth and Leviathan. Bohemoth and Leviathan. These are two monsters of the Old Testament. One beast is called the chief of pride, Falcon. Two representing the two forces in the world, spiritual force and material force. The beast would eventually dominate the religion, and he would also dominate what we call now the secular world. He himself has made the world secular. He secularized the thinking of man. He himself. Himself. I'm not talking about spooks, I'm talking about devilish beings in human form that keep conniving and working to preserve their world position in the world, or their seat of world power and dominance. To preserve that, they have been working all the time. And now, you find that they have been frightened, or troubled, I would say, in the religious water. They are troubled by the new language of interpretation that I have been given now for 4 years. This troubling language has caused them to back up from the church. Being the first one to make pride from our community and perhaps from America. There are those who don't care much about him, but they would like to use him to rob what has happened under my leadership of this new honor that it suggests. they would like to say that I'm only a follower of Minister Malcolm. That all what I've done is what he pointed out, what was pointed out in his leadership. Allah is the death knower. Let us go now to page 344, paragraph 4 of the autobiography of Malcolm X. And let us read what he says about he influencing me. All through the night, I copied similar long letters for others who were very close to me. Among them was Elijah Muhammad. Mailed the letters to all Elijah Muhammad. Pardon me, I'm sorry, among them was Ella, his sister Ella. Here he says, among them was Elijah Muhammad's son, Wallace Muhammad, who had expressed to me his conviction that the only possible salvation for the nation of Islam would be in its accepting and projecting a better understanding of Orthodox Islam. These people who tell me that you're following Malcolm, yeah, everything you've done, they have read this. They're familiar with this. But they didn't want to hear this. They only wanted to hear what they wanted, and that was that Malcolm influenced my leadership. Here is Malcolm. He's saying that I had expressed to him my firm conviction that the only hope for this community would be its accepting Orthodox Islam. He didn't put it in that word. I'll read his words for you again. All through the night, he said, I copied similar long letters for others who were very close to me. Here he's saying that I was very close to him. And he was very close to me. Among them was Elijah Muhammad's son, Wallace Muhammad, who had expressed to me his conviction that the only possible salvation for the nation of Islam would be accepting and projecting a better understanding of Orthodox Islam. That tells us a number of things. It tells us that I had influenced him before he met the Egyptians who encouraged him to make Hajj. It tells you something else. It tells you that he respected my influence equal or even over the teaching of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. I will tell you, I never recognized in him any respect for my authority over the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. But I did recognize in him a real special appreciation for my authority. All right. It tells us something else, too. It tells us that I was aware that the nation was on a collision course before it ever happened. Because this was before you saw this crash up. It tells us that Allah had blessed me to be aware that the nation of Islam was on a collision course before it happened. Listen to the language. The only possible salvation for the nation of Islam would be in its accepting a better understanding, projecting, accepting and projecting a better understanding of Orthodox Islam. That tells the reader beyond a shadow of a doubt that the man that influenced him, told him this, impressed him in this way, had already foreknowledge of the nation of Islam being troubled and on a collision course. And it says that Malcolm X was influenced by Wallace and not Wallace influenced by Malcolm. I'm only saying this for the newcomers. Everybody that knew us knew this. Nobody had to tell them that. Everybody that knew me and Malcolm, they know this. They know that I was a stronger, in fact, he was no influence in my life. The only influence he was in my life was influenced by his sharp-wittedness and his skill in debating anymore. No, I'm not going to sing anymore. But if he was here, he would tell you. He never, none of the ministers, even before God blessed me with the new understanding, none of the ministers would challenge me. They all have great respect for my leadership. That's why even right now, you couldn't pay Farrakhan to come and have a live debate with me in the public. No. And he is articulate. He's articulate. He's very persuasive. You couldn't pay him to debate me, to debate me. You don't believe it, go try. But I debate him for nothing. I'll meet him in an open public debate for nothing. And I wouldn't do anything but read what I said already. I wouldn't have to come up with anything new. I would just read what I've already said. And let him say whatever he wants to say. I'm not boasting, but I'm just telling you it's ridiculous for us to use excuses. Put up steady, weak excuses for not supporting my leadership. In my conclusion, I want to point to two super motivating ideas that impregnate society and give them the fuel for super achievement. One is a genuine faith in Almighty God. That's the acceptable one. One genuine faith in Almighty God come into a people, that does the rest. God is going to nourish them, nourish that faith, and going to protect them. That does the rest. He will eventually bring them into the leadership over those that won't accept genuine faith in him. The other way takes more time to explain, but I'm going to be very brief. The other way is to sell people on a false, super image of themselves. If you can sell them on believing that they are super, superior, that they are in some kind of way extraordinary by nature, that they have some kind of inherent or inborn superiority over other people. If you can sell them on that, you have fed them with a germ that will drive them on and on for greater and greater super achievement. This is the way that this false world leadership have been fired up. They have been fired up with a false lie, a false belief in some kind of innate superiority. Right now, you'll find members of the racist society of the Caucasian people trying to establish the genetic superiority of the Caucasian over the non-Caucasian. The teacher, mythical teacher we call Dr. Fun Mamet, he said this germ into the mind of those illiterate and under educated people that followed him in Detroit and Chicago and Milwaukee. He fed into them this super image of self as a super being by nature, innately or inherently better and superior to Caucasian people. He just reversed the psychology and sold the same philosophy to us. This psychology works like magic if you can combine it with a myth telling the origin of this special people. Because all people have their awareness of their place in present time and in present reality.
reality. And they can go back in their history as they know it, and they will find that the man lied to them. So he has to produce a newly fabricated history. And they call this myth. Why am I giving this to you today after holding you all these hours? It's because everything I'm giving you today is very, very important. Justify me holding you here. Dear people, most of our learned people are intellectuals. They are unaware of the reality of myth in the creation of superpowers. They think that the Nation of Islam is a silly kind of cult, religious cult, that was formed by some mystical man, playing with us, playing with our minds. They don't know that what he did was just a pattern, the same pattern repeated. What was done to Europe, what was done to Asia, what was done to Africa. Nations have been established in a position and in our awareness of superiority upon myth, not upon reality. There are great mythical tales that are told of the origin of the Greeks, the origin of the Turks, the origin of the Indians, the origin of the Chinese, the origin of the Egyptians. They can go back to mythical periods in their history, wherein a great masterpiece, an outrageous lie, was told about their origin in creation. So what Muhammad did, he showed them. He wasn't educated. And I think most likely in him was a resentment. He resented that the school he went to didn't recognize his genius. And I think he was not only after punishing Christian racist society, I think he wanted to punish the intellectuals too for rejecting his genius that he knew he had, but it couldn't manifest because he wasn't in tune with what they were asking for. So he failed on the examination. So to show them that he knew what they were hiding, that he knew how their histories evolved, he came to create him a community. Can't you see now? A mad scientist? No, I'm not laughing at him. Actually, he's not a mad scientist. He was, I would say, a bitter scientist. Not mad. He wasn't mad by a long shot. But I'm telling you mad scientist because that's the figure, that's the image they use to give the master scientist, the one that does it. So you can see the mad scientist being bitter because society didn't recognize his genius, and then bringing something to surpass the society or to make the society look like inferior to him. That's what he did. He invented a myth that would inject a sense of superiority in us that was really more massively put together than any myth that goes forth. It's more masterfully put together than Greek mythology, Egyptian mythology, Indian mythology. It was more massively put together than all of them. But I guess that was because he had more tools at his fingertips than they had in those earlier times of history. And maybe it was because of his unique genius too. So tell him I said that to make him feel better. Now, the man is very sharp, no doubt about that. And what hurts is that he is a spiritual man. He is truly a spiritual man. Very humble man. He practices humility. But in him is another personality that hurts that. He invented the Yaqub myth. The Yaqub myth serves as a beginning for the evolution of a new world order, a new world society. That Yaqub myth gave us a sense of real presence in an ancient history that predated Caucasian civilization or Caucasian existence on Earth. Wasn't that a masterful plan? Wasn't wasn't that a masterful trick? A masterful bait to attract us to come into a sense of racial superiority? What he did was come up with something unique and strange and very mystical, and what he did was prove that he was a better teacher of social reform than any of them. Or either he was more dedicated to the job, because they had tried all kind of methods of bettering the environment, giving us certain kind of environmental influences, injecting in us certain kinds of spiritual sentiments, feeding us certain kinds of human sentiments, giving us the Christ influence, making us feel that we want to be Christ-like people. They submitted us to all kinds of influences, thinking that those influences would evolve us into a real change, a social transformation that would make us stable elements or stable creatures in the society of America. But they failed. All of their efforts failed. The great majority of us were still unstable elements in the society. We were still out of the mainstream. We were still out of the main thinking of the society. We were still rejecting American society. So they couldn't bring us in. They couldn't socially reform us. They couldn't bring us inner dignity and inner peace. They couldn't dignify us within or externally. But with his reverse psychology and his myth of an origin in our ancestry that was glorious and beyond the Caucasian history, or predated the Caucasian history, he was successful in bringing us into a sense of dignity, a sense of identity, a sense of individual and collective worth among nations of the earth that made us take over our own supervision, discipline ourselves as individuals, improve the life of our families, take our families away from vulgar language, vulgar dancing, away from silly-mindedness. He gave us the tools for dignifying ourselves as individuals in society, and also for bringing dignity to ourselves as families and as members of our collective group in the society. He was successful in doing that. Let me repeat, the tool for making a super race. There's a super race that he made. The tool is to inject into the minds of the people, the subject people, a sense of reality, a sense of feeling and existence in a superior substance, superior human substance, a superior human mind and human nature that predates others. In effect, what he did was made you a god. And he used the term god very loosely. We are gods, the black gods. Use the term Allah even in the plural. We all are Allah. That's what he put in the lesson. We all are Allah. You see? So this feeding of super origin into your mind and making you feel a real historical relationship with an origin in superior ancestors. He even gave base for it. Gave a new calendar, a new history for us. He invented his own calendar, his own history, and his own date. He was more effective than Noble Du Ali. Noble Du Ali left his hanging too loosely. He didn't bring it home close enough. Farid Muhammad, he gave a personal name and racial identity to the creator of the white race. He said his name was Yaku. And he even gave us conversation that went on back there in that time. Said a man came to him and said, Mr. Yaku, what can we do to solve this problem that you have presented? And Mr. Yaku said, well, if you'll give me and my followers support for 20 years and an island on which we can create our own society, we will accept to leave your society and stop troubling you. they got together, the leaders got together, and they decided that they had to give Yaku what he wanted. And he made you visualize Yaku. So it all was made real. He said Yaku was when he was 6 years old, he was playing with 2 pieces of steel. Now you can visualize a boy at 6 years old playing with 2 pieces of steel. Then he had a very large abnormal head. So now you see a boy with a big abnormal head. So he was very, very effective in making his myth real to the mind of those who were buying it. So dear people, now that we know how the false world of superpowers were built, that they were built on lies, mystical lies, that tied their ancestors in with God, angels and God, and made them feel super race. Now that we know how they have made superpowers, and now we see that we've known how Prophet Muhammad was inspired by God to use nothing but truth, nothing but truth, and how he established a super order with faith in God and rational truth, clear cut truth. He didn't lie about anything. Which one will you choose? Will you choose to build a super race on mythical lies, or will you choose the Quran? Those who have built superpowers on lies, the Quran is knocking out their brains and crumbling their empire. They were doomed to fall. Peace be unto you. Assalamu alaikum.